The Buddha's main teaching, he said, I teach you all what is the cause of suffering and what is the path for release from suffering. And I think for those of us who have come to one of the anonymous programs, we found a path that releases a great deal of suffering, a great deal. And yet there's more. I mentioned something from the very beginning that in discourse after discourse, talk after talk, the Buddha, he kept showing there was this agonizing pain that came from this constant connecting to I, me, mine, me, that would just keep us on the wheel of greed, clinging, attachment, anger, aversion, and delusion. And so, as I said, we can see how relationships would get greatly, greatly affected. Because if I'm going to be in a relationship with somebody, I would like that person to have a little space in his life with her, or the other, or you, and have it not just all be about him. A very dear friend and Dharma teacher and one of the co-founders of New York Insight, sadly died very young, would often say to me, the most rigorous spiritual path is the one of relationship. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. So, you know, steps 1 through 7, very important steps, and they're a little more on the internal. You know, we're opening up to the truths inside of ourselves, and we start to talk about it a little bit with our sponsor, and we're looking at our thoughts and our actions and our words. But we're still in the safety zone, right? And we're doing it on our own pieces of paper, in our own minds. And we can look. And even then, it can be hard to look. But then we come to steps 8 and 9, and we have to go out of our safety zone. Now we're talking about really connecting outside of ourselves, really holding up the mirror to our actions, and not just in our own minds. So, steps 8 and 9, made a list of people we harmed, became willing to make amends to them all, and then made direct amends towards people whenever possible, except when to injure them or others. So I know I'm repeating myself, but this is the kind of thing that you can hear over and over and over 15 years, and then all of a sudden you go, oh, I get it. It's because I think I'm the center of the universe. That's what it is. And the only thing is, when relationship with somebody, that person thinks they're in the center of the universe. So we see what happens when nations collide. But what about when two universes collide? It takes a lot of doing, right, to try to figure this out. There's this other person who is the subject of his or her own life. So I want to read something. I've read it before here, but you know, every time I latch on to something I really like, I tend to repeat it. I don't know that many of you have memorized it anyway, so I'll take a chance. It's a well-known Tibetan master, Geshe Kelsen Gyatso. He says, until now we have cherished ourselves above all others, and for as long as we continue to do this, our suffering will not end. The path to enlightenment is really very simple. All we need to do is stop cherishing ourselves and learn to cherish others. I will add in parentheses, simple, not easy, not easy. He says all other spiritual realizations will naturally follow from this. Just take that in for a moment. Cherishing others. If you were to walk down the street, well, just look around the room. Even though many of you don't know each other, or you do know each other by sight, there's a shift in the heart and mind when you even open to, yeah, that person deserves to be cherished, just as I do. And then the heart opens. We have, he goes on to say, we have been slaves to our self-cherishing mind. We have trusted it implicitly, obeyed its every command, believing that the way to solve our problems and find happiness is to put ourselves before everyone else. This view is the source of all our ordinary selfish intentions. It's precisely because we think, I'm important, I need this, I deserve that, that we engage in negative actions which result in an endless stream of problems for ourselves and others. He is not saying, don't take care of yourself. He is not saying, don't have aspirations and follow them. He's talking about clinging as if this is the most important. Most important. So steps 8 and 9, as you can imagine, they require effort, they require deep sincerity, and it's very important. We have to have an understanding of our own intentions. We have to be willing to see how our actions, our speech, how they have consequences. That's a very big thing now, to see that what we do has consequences. If you step and it's been a little muddy, you will leave a footprint. But you know, we're leaving footprints all day long with our words, with our energies, and so much of the time we don't even realize it. And I'll tell you one quick, easy footprint. If I get on a bus and the bus driver says, good morning, that leaves a footprint for me. Something shifts. If he says, get on, lady, that's a footprint. And we're doing it all the time, in simple ways and in more complex ways. And this making of amends is a very big step of eradicating painful karma. Karma means it has to do with our actions. I'm not talking about lots of past lives, but just what we do has consequences. And so a very big part of this is cause and effect. And most of the time we don't understand that what we may be getting over here is an effect of something that we did yesterday, 5 weeks ago. Cause and effect, very, very important. And as we start to even look at this, we do become more mindful of our unskillful behaviors. And we start to see their emotional consequences because they are very related. Do you ever have the thing where somebody says, why are you so mad at me? What did I do? Why are you so mad? And then the person says, and you go, I don't know, what was the big deal? All I said was, but so much of what we throw away, it's a big deal, quote unquote, in the way we affect other people. And of course, if our main relationship has been some form of addiction, it's definitely going to get in the way of other relationships. And we are so fortunate to have such an unusual program. I don't think one has to be an addict to get something from the 12 steps. I think everybody could take the 12 steps, right? Just by saying, I admitted I was powerless over my ego, made my life unmanageable, and you got the whole thing laid out there. The whole thing. Yeah. When we have an aspiration, and we can't always get it right, we can't always do it, to live a more open and free life, we become willing to go beyond the story of who did that to me, who should apologize first, he did it worse, I shouldn't have to say I'm sorry, you know, that whole thing, trying to look where to pin the, what is that game, pin the tail on the donkey? It's like pin the blame on somebody else or however you want to work it. And then we become ready to cultivate the soil. Do you ever plant anything? You don't just throw the seeds on it, right? You have to work the soil a little bit. You have to plant it. You have to make the soil a little more porous. You know, you put the seeds in, then you have to cover it up again. You have to wait. same thing having to do with relationship. Take some work. And so we cultivate this soil in our mind and our heart, and we get ready. We get ready to take whatever the necessary actions are. And in this case, let's look more closely at steps 8 and 9. So I'm going to quote the big book for a moment. Steps 8 and 9. Learning how to live in the greatest peace and brotherhood with all men and women of whatever description is a moving and fascinating adventure. Wow. It's the whole thing. You just said it's Dharma. It is Dharma. It's the pith truth of the Buddhist teachings. Learning. And could you imagine what the world would be like? Or could you imagine what your household would be like? Just that. And these steps, again, not to be done by rote. It's real easy to go, okay, remember, I write it all down. And I go, sorry. Oh, I feel so much better. No. They're a container. These steps are a container for an ever-deepening reflection. And one of the instructions that you gave in the meditation, which is so important, non-judgmentally. Because as we start to think about people we've harmed, the judgment could start. Ugh, why'd I do that? I'm such a this kind of person, a that kind of person. That's where you first make an apology to yourself. Oh, Sandra, I'm sorry I'm so mean to you the way I talk to you. By the way, I think that's a wonderful thing to do. Talk to yourself and say you're sorry. Try better. They call upon us, these steps call upon us to examine our intentions. What are our intentions? It's not just about asking for forgiveness and forgiving. What's really going on? Because only then will we really be free. And we can start to get underneath what I started to talk about before, karma, cause and effect. Cause and effect. And as we reflect on how our past and how our present behavior has harmed somebody else, when we start to reflect, and you have to really have kindness, because it's really hard to see yourself acting poorly and harmfully. It's hard to see it. That's why we have all the other steps before this, you know? But to be able to look at it, as we start to look at this, we get, even though we don't know anything about the Buddha perhaps, but we're doing this, we're getting more intimate with the Buddha's key teaching of do no harm. The key teaching. And I remember once, I was really taken aback. I mean, the Dalai Lama, who I think he meditates 4 or 5 hours a day, and he has read everything, and he knows so much. And he's a happy person, and he's kind. Anybody that I know that's had anything to do with him, like come up close, they can just feel the sunshine coming right into them. But once the Dalai Lama said, he said, look, it's really important to be kind to others. And then he said, but if you can't be kind, at least do no harm. You know, so we have a little bit of a fallback. Because we're not going to always run around being kind. It would be nice, but we're not going to. But to do no harm. And you know, we harm in so many ways. We harm by omission. Not just commission. We harm, for example, you know, times when I don't return a call for a long time. That's harming the other person, because I know what it's like to have made a call and I'm waiting 4 days, 5 days, no call back. It doesn't feel good. So we have all these different ways. Harming does not mean slicing somebody. No, not just that. And our words, our tones. Because even the people with the big muscles who work out, they're sensitive also. We're all sensitive. The one thing I think we all have in common, whether we're ready to admit it or not, is we want to be liked. Just like all animals, like dogs, want to be petted. And we want to be liked. And we harm people with our tones. So I'm just going to quickly go into a four-step practice about this that's rooted in Tibetan Buddhism and doesn't contradict anything in what we're doing. But it's part of the Tibetan Buddhist philosophy. And it has to do about the process of making amends. Sometimes I find if you change the languaging a little bit, you can get some other sense of it. It just expands a point of view. And it says, first recognize that you've done something that caused suffering and harm. Now, I think if we've gone through the steps and we've done steps 4 and 5, we have a little more to help us recognize. So at least that's there. We may have to reread them to remember. But first, recognize. Before we ask for forgiveness, we need to understand what we're asking to have forgiven. It's not just, I'm sorry I've been such a slouch. I'm sorry I wasn't nice to you. That doesn't do it. That really doesn't do it. Come back to what's harm. Harm is a word, action, and even thought, because it all starts with thought, that causes suffering in someone else or others. Now, for example, I watch my brother and sister-in-law banter back and forth. And it's interesting because at one point many, many years ago when my brother was bantering with me the way he bantered with his wife, I thought, he doesn't like me. What's going on? Why did I go all the way down to Florida for this? And I said something to my sister-in-law, and she said, oh, Sandra, he loves you so much. That's just the way he is. Now he does it. It doesn't hurt. So we got to know who we're talking to and how we're talking. Because we might mean no harm at all, and we might be slicing some other people. So this is really getting sensitive. So in order to do this thing about avoiding doing harm, we need to become more aware of why we are causing it or what we are doing. So now we're not just looking, as we did in step 4, at our own stuff. We're looking about how our quote-unquote stuff is affecting other people. We may have to make some shifts. Very powerful. Now, the Buddha said something interesting. I don't know, I'm not quoting him directly, but in the Buddhist thinking, he said, doing harm is the result of discomfort with the way things are. Right? We don't like the way things are, so we try to make it better. And in doing it, we have a lot of different ways. Just take something called subway. The lady with a cane, there's an empty seat. Somebody comes on, I come on, you come on, you see the empty seat, you don't look around, you make a dash for the seat, the old lady with the cane is standing there. We did a little harm. Obviously, I'm picking something rather on the small side. Yeah. And again, a lot of what we do, when we look at our discomfort, it's because something has tread on the I, me, mine. What you said hurt my feelings, so So this I, me, mine. And you know what I said before? It's precious. Each I in here is precious. And you want to acknowledge that. We have to take care of ourselves carefully. But it's not the whole thing. It's not the whole thing. So we ask ourselves, who did I hurt? Why? How? Who? Why? How? And it's helpful to contemplate the destructive habitual patterns in our lives. And we all have habitual patterns. And they're so habitual that we don't even think of them anymore. We just do them. Someone said to me, you know, Sandra, I got to tell you, I don't really like when you call me after 10:30. Okay, it hadn't occurred to me that she might not like it. But I never said to her, I never asked her, hey, what's the latest I can call? So sometimes people can help us out if they say what's going on. But maybe we need to think it through a little bit beforehand. Yeah, we have patterns. Okay, so then we ask, what and who have I tried to control? What or who have I been blaming? Who have I been judging? Who have I been taking from? It's a whole lot of questions. When I'm taking care of myself and being defensive in a way of taking care of my little self here, what attitudes do I have, either overt or covert, that might harm somebody else? Maybe very innocent, I'm just trying to take care of myself. So we ask these questions. And it's really interesting when you start asking the questions, what you start to see. Because there's a lot to see. And it's worth putting your whole being in this when you start to do it. Because this spiritual path is the real path to happiness. Doesn't matter how much shopping you do, stuff wears out. This is what really does it. And the list is a map towards your own spiritual gains. Okay, so first recognize. Then second, and this is where meditation is really helpful, sit with the feeling of remorse and regret. Now notice I didn't say sit with the feeling of guilt. Guilt is about blame. Remorse opens to approach to do something about it. And there's a huge difference. It doesn't do any good to go, I'm such a bad person, I'm such a bad person. No, not at all. Feel it in your body. When you realize what you've done, feel it in your body. What would it be like if someone did that to you? That's always a good way to shift it around. Experience the emotions. Let yourself feel. As we look at the harm caused by our behaviors, let that. Don't. It's not about pushing the feelings away, but again, it's not about wallowing. And not about guilt. So we recognize, as I said, we have regret and remorse, and then there's the third step. We move into a place of compassion for yourself and the other. And this is what I really love about it. I remember once saying to a client something about compassion, which to me is all of the spiritual path, or so much of it. And she said, oh, don't give me that New Age shit. Oh. Okay. Compassion. Giving ourselves some care. And I like the idea of sitting with some compassion for yourself and the person to whom you want to make the amend. Like putting yourself in the same room in your heart. And you might want to try it. You might want to try it. In a talk given by a beautiful Buddhist teacher, nun, Pema Chodron, take a deep breath and let it out and think to yourself, may we both be free of this suffering. Isn't that lovely? May we both be free of this suffering. And then, fueled by this compassion, which can help with whatever fear and whatever you may be feeling, we can move to the final step, which is setting the intention to go towards positive action. And then you can start making a plan how you want to do it. So I really like that four-pronged way, but there are many, many ways. As we get ready to make amends, we have to see, are we really willing to confront our need to make some changes, to take responsibility for our words and action, to make some changes. Because we're talking about relationship, it's going to mean, so many people have said to me in therapy or friends or hear them all over, how many times, oh, I know he's going to say, I'm sorry, and I know he means it, and then 3 weeks later he's doing the same thing again. How many times have we said to somebody, I want to make an amend, or I'm really sorry, but we didn't change? So this is really about making a change. So here are some questions to consider for these steps. In looking at my relationships, what patterns have I discovered that have done harm to me and others? That's kind of a generic one. What patterns have I discovered? Two, what gets in the way of making amends? What gets in the way? And then another piece, which I appreciate for myself, am I willing to do it even if I don't want to? A lot of times if we wait till we want to, we might be too old to do anything. Right? I don't, you know, what if I had said 39 years ago, I'm not going to stop drinking until I really want to, not have to. Well, I wouldn't be sitting here with all of you tonight, that's for sure. Another one. Now, here's a big one. What sort of changes or restitutions am I willing to undertake to set it right? So it's more than just going in. Because when you think of the word amend, it's adding something to or shifting, changing. It's not just sorry. So, you know, you can start to think, you know, what's my experience with step eight? If you haven't done it, what's my experience with thinking about step eight? Those are good questions. So step nine. Made direct amends to such people, except when to do so would injure them or others. There's a book called The Gentle Path Through the 12 Steps says, step nine challenges us to stop seeking approval and to seek integrity, to pursue integrity by making amends for harm we've done. To stop seeking approval. I think that's a really big one. In the beginning, when I would make an amend, part of what I wanted was approval back. But that's not what it's about. And it's hard to stop seeking approval, because we all want it. So it's a whole big thing is developing a real willingness to make a real change in how we're behaving. Because without this change, without this willingness to change, you're not going to change like that. I'm sorry is meaningless, totally meaningless. I cringe when I think of the thousands of sorries. I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. You could carpet the land from here to California with I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. So, the other part you have to be careful of, are you making an amend as a manipulation? Or is it for real?
Manipulation.
Manipulation. Manipulation. And I remember when I was married and drinking, I was always saying, I'm sorry, and my husband kept saying, oh, it's okay. And so it was a shame because if he had said, if you're going to be sorry, then make some changes. But, you know, he didn't say that. I wonder why. He was a lawyer. He was a good lawyer. He could have said that. Yeah. So we need to really look, what are our intentions? And the Buddha taught over and over again the importance of awareness, both internally and externally. Internally and externally, and I love that because it means opening our vision to more than just here. What's going on out there? Especially when I'm involved in interacting. The other thing, as I think many of you have read or have experienced, the making of the amend is not conditional on its outcome. We have no control over how the other person is going to take it, and we need to know that. Yes, it's beautiful. Sometimes it works amazingly. I hear the most marvelous stories about people who've made amends and so many things changed. And I heard one day where a person was looking over her list and she remembered that 20, 25 years ago her roommate, she stole money from her roommate. And she said to her sponsor, 20, 25 years ago, how am I going to find that person? And the sponsor said, at least look. And she looked online and she finally found the person. I just love this story. And she called the person, she had to remind the person who she was. And she told the person what had happened. And they talked for about an hour. And at the end, the roommate said, oh, you know, I'm so glad you stole the money. Because if you hadn't, and you hadn't gotten to this place in your life, we might never have had this connection. And then they arranged to get together. We don't know, but it doesn't always happen that way. But the purpose isn't for it to become a good relationship. The purpose is to clean our side. And then we never know what's going to happen after that. That's what's important. And to do this, it takes insight. You have to look. It takes courage. It takes courage. And sometimes we need somebody to help give us the courage. It takes compassion, as I said. It takes dedication. It takes dedication to wanting a life that's free of self-caused pain. Yeah, certain pains we can do nothing about. Certain pains we can do. And we need to really pay attention to know what to do, how to do it, when to do it. And you know what happens? Little by little, our lives become realigned with a reality that we didn't know, and the reality of the truth and the way things are. It gets lighter. It gets lighter. And it's not any accident that after the ninth step, if you look at the big book, they have the promises. And actually, Angela came up with the idea, and I think it's wonderful. Next month, we're going to talk about the promises. Let's look and see, what are the gifts here? We can do that in step 10 together, I think. Yeah. Yeah. So there's something we do get back. It's a good bargain. We get a lot back, a lot back. The Buddha spoke of the importance of clear comprehension, sampajana, clear comprehension, and clear comprehension of purpose in whatever we do. And in the same way, step 9 calls for reflection and understanding. And so I'm just going to, he talked about 4 areas of comprehension. I'll quickly mention 2. Clear comprehension of purpose. Start to really take in what is the aim of what we're doing here. What is the intention? Really hold that very close. And again, I'm going to say this because it's important. The question to ask yourself, what is the motivation for wanting to make this particular amend? What is the motivation? Check it out. Is it merely to be liked by that person? Is it to be free of stress? Is it because I want to just get clean? I want to live a life of more purity and happiness? Just to know. and just to know, repairing the damage. So you want to know what your purpose is. Again, you need to be prepared. You do not know what the response is. You need to think about that beforehand. Sometimes you might be surprised, unhappily, and sometimes surprised happily. Fine. You're doing what you need to do. I had one very profound and sad experience with somebody who was a best friend for a long time. I didn't realize that some habit of mine just was making her crazy. And I didn't get it till she finally said, "I've had it." And I did a lot of thinking about it, and I tried to call, and she said, "I don't even want to talk." And in the beginning, it was so crushing. It was so crushing. But I had to be with myself with compassion and send her compassion for the pain that I wasn't even aware that I was causing her. But boy, it opened my eyes. And I don't make that mistake anymore. And maybe someday we'll connect again, I don't know. But I had to let it be okay that I could go on. And when I think about it, I get sad, but we'll see what happens. You know? So we don't know what we're going to bump into. The other one is clear comprehension. It's your clear comprehension of purpose. Clear comprehension of suitability. Is this the right time to do it? I mean, if somebody is getting married, you're not going to call them the night before you get married and say, "By the way, I slept with your husband-to-be." That's not suitable. And if you do that, don't try to show up at the wedding. No, so we got to ask a lot of questions. Is the person well enough to hear it? Is this the time to do it? What will be the effects of doing it? And sometimes people aren't around anymore. And one way we can make an amend when we can't actually do it verbally, whether because it's not appropriate, a person's not here, we can come up with some form of something that we do that makes up for it. So if we're making an amend for having not paid enough attention to a person, we can go out of our way to pay attention to somebody who needs attention. You'll find some way. Sometimes people make donations in behalf of different things. But in their mind, it's a making of an amend, because that's what we're doing. We're cleaning ourselves. And we don't do these other things because it's easier, but because the actual amend is just not suitable, it's just not appropriate. So we ask a lot of questions. Again, we don't want to injure anybody else. Again, one last thing about step 9. You have to remember a major fact. You cannot take back and erase your actions and words. You just can't. But often it will clear the relationship and you can move forward. And I think it would be really wonderful for all of you to really take more of a look. It's both in the big book and in the 12 and 12 and some of the contemplations in there, and just become a little more clear. Mel Ash, in a book called The Zen of Recovery, states, "Although we may feel powerless when making amends, we discover that we've always had the real power to change for the better and to wake up." That's what we're learning. By seizing the moment and making amends, we're assuring that our disease becomes fully integrated into the whole real human being that we're becoming. So steps 8 and 9, we develop more understanding, and this is major in terms of the Buddha's teachings, of how we're all interrelated. We're all interrelated. And we deepen our sense of how we're constantly affecting each other. And so it's not just step 8 and 9 takes care of the past. Steps 8 and 9 open us up to a beautiful, clearer way of being in the future. And with a growing recognition of our essential non-separateness, again, this is a major teaching of the Buddha, when we take in our non-separateness from the world, our way of acting and being is bound to change. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.